Welcome back, interweb friends. Stop the movie. I want to get out. Hollywood makes bad movies. We make fun of them.
At least they make bad movies, all right? Because yeah. Oh my God. I just watched this movie an hour ago. I just got done watching.
Oh wow, you're
really worked up. About
yeah, you're hyped up on Santa.
You haven't put any maggots in that room yet.
Do you mind if I introduce people?
Sorry, go ahead.
This movie. I don't know if that's okay.
Sorry, go ahead.
I'm Alex Dunbar, joined as always by Jack Estabrook, Cody Wolf,
hey,
Andy Wolf
here,
Brian Mueller.
Hello.
For our first annual holiday movie fiasco fiesta.
Ooh, I like that.
And guys, what a movie. What a movie we have. The 1985 Santa Claus the Movie.
Now, I thought we couldn't do this. I thought holiday movie, you can't really, it's a holiday movie. So you don't expect much out of it.
You don't expect much out of a lot of
movies.
Well,
you know, right? A holiday movie is like, you know, it's for kids, it's for, you know, adult, you know.
But okay.
You don't expect much out of them, but the whole, this one,
well,
it fulfilled the show's needs.
I felt this movie was very different from some of the other films we've done here, where an hour into this movie, I'm still writing notes. I'm like, well, this isn't that bad. It's sort of okay as a kid's movie. And then things go horribly off the rails. I mean, but for an hour, this is a pretty solid kids movie, I thought.
I think it's not good, but I can agree that you can forgive a lot of its cheese because it's a holiday film.
I think
film
that if they
kids.
Stretch that first hour into an entire movie about, you know, how Santa Claus
the
came
origins
to be,
of Santa Claus.
Right. It wouldn't be on the show.
I would have shown that to my kids if I could.
Yeah. It wouldn't be on the show.
It's not that bad. To go right into it, I had kind of forgotten this. I remember I'm probably the only one in this room who was of children age when this was in theaters. I was 11 when this was in theaters, and at the time, the words "Alexander Salkind presents" didn't mean as much to me as they do now, which are just a huge red flag.
That's a cringeworthy moment right there,
yeah.
Folks at home.
The Salkind, although the Salkinds put a fair amount of money into this, and we're going to move quickly through the first hour of this movie because you're getting like they basically take the Superman formula almost in like an origin story.
Yeah, that's the problem with the whole thing is that you didn't need this first 35. I looked at the clock, 35 minutes, and I'm like, they haven't got to the plot line yet, really.
But
you don't need to have the Santa Claus origin to tell the story that they're telling.
My thing is I didn't think that you needed the plot that came afterwards. I think the whole movie should have been the origin.
I agree with Cody.
Either way, structurally, this is a mess.
Yes.
There's clearly two movies here that were glued together, which explains why it shifts so quickly.
Right. It was a mess because it got towards the end of the first, I don't think it was the first act or whatever it was. That's what I mean. The structure was out of control. I was watching with my wife and she's like, oh, I thought it was over because it got to where he's flying, you know. Oh, I thought this movie was over.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it's like, you know, bam, here's the next plot.
Well, it's strange something had to happen because there was no conflict in the movie for the first hour.
There was
like a documentary.
There was an awful lot of smiling, though.
Well, and to kind of, we'll go through the origin part they do. They're kind of showing that Santa was a guy who liked to bring presents to kids in a snowbound, I mean,
forest.
It's like a mountain village in some like Eastern European country.
Eastern, okay.
And he gets snowed in with his wife on the trail, and they freeze.
I don't think they fell asleep.
No, they died.
No, they slept.
They really died.
They slept. They were.
I think that they're supposed to
peaceful sleep. They went into.
Are they supposed to have died? Because I don't. I'm not sure if they're supposed to have died or if they were on the brink of death and the elves rescued them.
Wow, Cody is very sure about this. Did you get the deleted scenes with the DVD?
Believe me,
which was great.
They definitely leave it open.
Can you imagine seeing the deleted scenes from this movie? The scenes didn't make the cut for this.
I thought they definitely left it open that they died and somehow were brought back to. I mean,
that's how I saw it.
Clarifying.
We were laughing at that actually because it's like kind of like, oh my god, they start this movie off with death.
That's what I said. Yeah, I'm like, why? Santa just died in the first 5 minutes of this movie. Where's this going?
So the elves find him.
Weren't they called something else?
The Vernockers.
He calls them something
Tommy
elaborate.
Or something,
They're like Wiederhausen.
The Hard Knockers.
Except then the elves are like, no, we're elves. You don't have to call us some weird name. We're elves.
So why not just call them elves?
Well, because then they said, because Mrs. Claus also says, she says something like, "Oh, little people," and they're like, "Not that little." They're like,
"Yeah, no,
I'm the same height as she is."
Yeah, right. Oh yeah, some of them are queer. Like
they didn't try any of the Peter Jackson camera angles.
In they didn't even hire kinda, little like, people to play the elves.
They do. If you watch this film, Dudley Moore's height ranges from 3 feet tall to 5.5 feet tall, depending on what scene you're looking at in the film.
True. I never thought of them as like being really elf-like, though.
No, they don't have pointed ears. They don't have the pointy shoes. They wear a lot of polka dots.
They just dress strangely.
Yeah, wear polka dots.
Yeah. So the elves bring them to this
Fortress of Solitude.
It basically is the Fortress of Solitude.
That's what I thought. Yeah. I was like,
I mean,
it looks exactly. Like
there's
it.
Definitely a lot, as we'll get into, a lot of Superman recycled stuff in this movie, and a lot of this stuff at the North Pole looked very Superman Fortress of Solitude recycled.
Mm-hmm. So why did the Santa's workshop at the North Pole exist in the first place?
That's what I was.
This was my question.
This is a great question.
Well, they were waiting.
They were waiting for Santa.
Okay, right, so yeah, so these people prophecy. Have a society. They live in a city where they do nothing but build toys for generations.
And I'm
waiting for one person to die on the road so that they can make them their leader?
Winter Jack, slumber. Why are you questioning this?
My other question
sounds
was perfectly
impractical
sound.
About that to you? That sounds like a totally reasonable
plan. I go with
plan.
That. I'll go with it. I'll go with it.
My other question is, if I guess it's not appropriate right now, but later on they say something about how, you know, Santa lives forever just like the elves live forever. But my question was, why are there old elves and young elves then?
Why is there
ancient elf?
What a bad hand you were dealt if you're like one of those old 80-year-old elves and you're just stuck like that forever. It's like, damn. Why couldn't I be like Dudley Moore like when I got the whole forever Tuck Everlasting elixir?
Yeah. So the elves take him in. They show him that they've got magic feed that makes reindeer fly.
And reindeer is like tweak out too.
That's the thing. He has two reindeer when he's in the snow. Then they had, what, six more reindeer just to anticipate that he might need them?
I mean, that's how many reindeer it takes to fly a sleigh, Jack.
These reindeer.
Well,
it was the prophecy. The prophecy was they were going to get two more reindeers, though. Yeah.
I just figure, why not have the elves either have Santa have the 8 reindeer in the snow or have him walking in the snow and then have him be given all 8 reindeer? Why have 2 of the reindeer be outsiders?
Or why not have the elves have 7 of the reindeer and Santa have 1?
There you go.
Yeah.
Or 5 and 3, you know, we can do.
And those reindeer, I don't know, they look pretty damn creepy to me.
Well, I'm going to
pay
this movie a compliment. I thought the audio animatronic reindeer.
Yeah, actually, yes. The reindeer have little reaction shots where their eyes bulge out when they're scared or where they kind of, laugh at little things.
I would argue that the reindeer who's afraid of heights, like that one reindeer who's afraid of heights, that audio animatronic reindeer might be better than 50% of the human actors in this movie.
Yes.
They went to the well one too many times with the ears over the eyes, but other than that, it was...
Yeah, that was a little...
Was anyone else creeped out that the reindeer food was sparkly?
And it made them tweak out. They ate it and they're all like...
Oh, yeah, when tweak out.
Was I the only one who was like, I think there's LSD in the reindeer food?
That's what made them fly.
Yeah, I mean, was anyone really flying, or was this all happening in their head?
It worked in the Big Lebowski. Maybe it was the same sort of stuff.
That's true.
I think it might be some animal cruelty charges there against Santa for...
That looked pretty painful. Force feeding his reindeer, hallucinogenics.
That looked pretty painful when they ate it.
Yeah,
they tweaked out pretty hard.
That was pretty weird.
I mean,
One other thing I want to talk about from this section. Can we talk about how somewhere out there there's an actor who can say, "Oh yeah, I worked on Santa Claus. Oh, what was your job? Oh, I held Burgess Meredith's giant beard. That's it. That was my job. Burgess Meredith
and
came
that,
in
for that like
beard holder one, beard
that, like,
holder
5 minute walk down the." Yeah, he's just walking for like 5 minutes with two guys holding his beard.
Theoretically, those people, that's going to be their job for the rest of their lives.
They
to
should
hold
be known
that.
I hope they have like an 8x10 of
now
that.
By this, can
that's
I just say
if they're alive for eternity, they have to hold
that's a layer of hell. That's like some layer of hell, having to hold a guy's beard for all eternity.
This is probably this is an obvious question, I suppose, that can be asked of the Santa Claus story, but at this point in the film, when they bring Burgess Meredith in and they're celebrating the spirit of Christmas, which is just... a time of year where magical light pours in on all the elves, and then they laugh and dance and proceed to do what they've been doing the whole movie. And then Burgess Meredith bestows upon the Santa Claus character that he will officially be called Santa Claus, and that this is his mission now to deliver toys to boys and girls around the world. I'm thinking to myself, what does this have to do with Jesus? Now one could ask that question of any Christmas movie, but it's like Christmas existed like apart from... I don't know.
Well, it's really like they were dancing around not wanting to do copyright infringement on some of the great Rankin Bass specials.
Yes.
Like Santa Claus is Coming to Town or The Life and Times of Father Christmas. So they're kind of like trying to like maneuver in between those two Rankin Bass specials. Like
it's a treacherous minefield.
Yeah. While also being totally non-denominational, you know, non-secular. Well, I can understand that.
Whatever. I mean,
you know,
but
like, yeah.
Non-Christians celebrate Christmas too. But
I was just surprised to see Bridges Meredith pop up.
For one scene. He's in one scene, never seen again. Like, what is that elf doing the rest of the time? Like, if I was the other elf,
he's like previous
Santa Claus?
It's pretty
much his job to say, oh, the prophecy has been fulfilled.
And yeah, he comes around every 1,000 years and updates people on the prophecy. Nothing yet. Hold that beard higher. Come on.
It's in my soup.
His life must be incredibly difficult.
Right.
How do you function when you need two people to hold your beard?
Going to the bathroom.
Of the day?
Going to the bathroom must be a pain.
Yeah.
Everything's a pain.
Really difficult. So you get a lot of this for about 45 minutes to an hour, kind of setting up how it all works.
I think it was like 40 minutes.
Yeah.
I got to say, Santa was like pretty cool with the whole like process of becoming Santa Claus. Like,
yeah.
Like, you were dead and we brought you back to life. Okay.
Yeah,
you're going to come into our little palace where we've been making toys for thousands of years. Sounds good. You're going to live forever,
forever.
And then once a year, you're going to go around
the entire
Earth
world.
Yep. And give gifts to every child. Yeah. All right. When do I start?
I forgot about the one scene, though, when they first went to bed. Santa.
Oh, yeah,
Claus.
He's like, Anya?
Oh, yeah.
I can't sleep. This bed's soft. He's like, this will only... What he says...
This will only take a minute.
Oh,
no. I know. I'm like, wow, first night. They're getting comfortable already.
This is for the adults.
They almost died. They almost died. They shared this experience. Now they're going to be closer.
This is the first night of the rest of our eternal lives, Anya. Let's make it a good one.
Let's make it special, baby.
Oh.
Were they like sleeping in a closet?
Little Christmas.
They're like these two little doors.
Yeah, their bed has a door.
I got some of that
on.
Sprinkly stuff we can eat. Let's just say it makes a bunch of things rise.
Oh, no. We're flying high now, baby.
Even when you're 80, don't worry about it.
Okay. So Santa's like all in on this right away.
Well, that's what I was thinking. Like, because like day one, they're never like. Can we go home? Like, why are we here? Like, they're never, like, feel kidnapped or anything.
Yeah, they're just like, oh, okay.
I can understand, well, maybe does he feel like, and obviously the film doesn't explain this, is he supposed to, like, know because he's the prophecy? For some reason, I know that this is what I'm meant to do. Even one line would have made more sense than
that. Yeah, right, yeah. Mm-hmm. One line or something.
Yeah.
He literally is just,
well, I mean, I guess...
Oh my God, little people!
If you see little people and see this kingdom approach, you know...
Appear out of nowhere.
Front of, yeah, I guess he'd be like, okay, yeah. I'll go with it. Right?
Okay.
Very easy,
instead
guys.
Instead of what
wow,
about the children?
Easy,
what about
know?
The children of my village who are freezing to death?
Yeah. Yeah.
Magicians fool me easily, by the way.
I guess so. If a magic village ever pops out of the snow and we never see any again.
We'll know what happened to him.
Yeah. Wow. All right.
The magician told me.
Andy's car gets stranded on Erie Boulevard one snowy night and they'll save him.
Yeah.
I'm going.
There he goes.
Okay. All right. So then the movie then moves into the modern era. By modern era, I mean very 1985.
Very.
Very 85. Where Santa...
Still delivers crappy...
Well, there's
inventories.
A montage where Santa delivers Christmas
they
presents.
They haven't changed with the times.
Each and every Christmas up until 85, and then all of a sudden
toys.
The story stops.
It's the same toys from back in, like, 1400 or whenever it was.
Same crappy...
People still like wooden horses,
right? Can we say something
right
now? That everyone in this movie totally not only believes in Santa, but knows that he's real. And parents just expect Santa to deliver toys, and like there's like an elf brand of toys that the villain of the film, a toy business.
Oh yeah, we haven't even got
that. The structure is so bad, we haven't even got to that yet.
I know.
Yeah.
They're competing with Santa.
Well, first,
the little boy.
Well, before we even get to that, Santa sets up a competition at the North Pole Workshop.
Oh, that's right. Okay. Yeah.
Because Santa's like, what's the best way to make these toys? And, Dudley Moore, we even talk about Dudley Moore. Dudley Moore is a very ambitious elf who, among other things, claims to take credit for inventing pipes, which
mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure pipes date back
alarm clock.
Ancient
BC.
Rome.
Yeah, I don't, where no one in this movie, when Santa moves into the North Deadpool seems to know what a pipe is.
I know, Sid is all confused when he mentions
Well, they're very sheltered in that elf
I mean, pipes
palace.
Are not... Like, if they were riding around in a sled, like, with ropes and things, they knew what a pipe was. This is not that new of a technology.
And the alarm clock.
Yeah.
He did, yeah. He was ahead of his time with the alarm clock. Yeah.
Sharper image.
So Santa sets up this weird competition between sort of an old-school craftsman elf and Dudley Moore, who's fascinated by automated manufacturing techniques. Because you know what kids love in a kid's movie? A discussion assembly of assembly line production methods and cost efficiency.
Yeah, now, does this
cannot get
they
enough
eat
of
it
that.
Up.
Now, I was thinking about this. Does that mean they were planning on laying off elves for the workshop?
That's a great
That's
question.
Where I got nervous about. I was like, what's going on?
Yeah, I don't That's a really good question.
There's
going
to be these happy little pink slips in their stockings.
Yeah.
They dance out of the factory without their jobs.
And they live forever.
Unemployment!
Else.
Yay! Last
gonna
forever!
Go, they're going to go work for the Easter Bunny.
I think, or maybe they were just on furlough. I'm not sure.
Maybe.
Yeah. And simultaneously, we just get introduced to this homeless kid.
All of a sudden, right.
In New
Again,
York City.
Right.
And he's like, he looks like Oliver Twist. He's literally got the dirt smudge on his face and the fingerless gloves.
Well, I thought this was like 1800 something until a cop car drove by because I thought because
there really
he does,
is no time frame
like,
it's like it, it's got to be
like
at
a chimney
least,
sweep
it's at least the 1600s where Santa Claus is rescued. Then they kind of show this little montage of him delivering toys to kids who appear to be dressed for that period, and then all of a sudden, as Cody mentioned, it's right, you get this kid with like this scarf and the fingerless gloves and out in the snow, and then a car drives by.
They show the hourglass with it filling up.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. Through the
but
centuries.
I can't tell
montage.
What century it is because I'm not freaking Roman.
Roman.
I don't know what the frick to say. What year was that? I don't know.
I'm not Roman. By that logic, no one can read Roman numerals except people from Rome.
Right, I don't know what it said.
I'm sorry, can we get a Roman in here to translate this?
I have no idea what Super Bowl we're on because they got the damn Roman numerals. What the hell are we on right now?
God.
Jesus, right. Give me a freaking number. Why does it got to be Roman numerals?
I don't know Roman numerals because I'm not Roman.
Stay tuned next week for Andy Wolf's thoughts on the metric system.
Don't get me going on that one.
Yeah. We really...
You must be very confused when you go to like a Mexican restaurant.
Oh, I've been
I would never step foot
He
also can't understand British accents, too. He said that before.
Oh,
he can't watch James Bond
British
movies.
Accents.
They're not British accents, dude.
He can't understand
I'm going to be doing the rest of this podcast in an accent. Thank you very much.
What the hell did he say? I can't,
he once told me he didn't like Fight Club because he can't understand British accents.
He can't.
There's no British accents.
There is.
Fight Club?
No one. Are you talking about Helena Bonham
Carter? Have you seen Fight Club?
No. What's his face? The main guy. The pretty boy.
Brad Pitt?
Yeah.
He doesn't have a British accent.
Are you talking about Snap? Snatch?
I think he's talking about,
You must be talking about Snatch, and you're not supposed to understand what he's
That's
saying.
That's a joke.
Oh my God, we
subtitled him.
We are so off track. Okay.
How do you confuse Fight Club with Snatch?
No, it was Fight Club, was it?
Fight Club is American.
You're definitely talking about Snatch.
Snatch!
It's not some weird version of Fight Club with British
Holy
accents.
Cow. We...
Yes!
Oi, let's go to Fight Club. What do you say, man?
What's
the first one? You know what the first one of Fight Club is? You know what about Fight Club, eh?
Edward Norton was some weird Australian character, I remember.
I'm now trying to imagine a mix-up of Snatch and Fight Club, and what an insane movie that would be.
Especially since it has Jason Statham in it. Imagine all the wacky stuff he'd be doing.
Yeah.
And Brad Pitt was in a movie called The Mexican, too, so you probably didn't like that one.
I didn't see that
one. All right, anyway, back on track. Holy cats. Okay, so we really find out we're in 1985 because
we get a
shameless McDonald's advertisement.
We do. There's like these kids are eating McDonald's food, and then it pans to like
it's got
the
all
window.
These people like eating happily.
And the homeless kid is staring at these kids eating hamburgers.
And it's not like just like product placement. I mean, this is like 25 seconds.
It's a whole
multiple
scene.
They're close up with people like eating and doing that. That was good face.
And think about this. In researching this, they shot this movie in England at Pinewood Studios. They had to build that McDonald's. That's not on location.
Oh
they
gosh.
Built a McDonald's
on
to put
set?
A shameless plug in for McDonald's.
Wow.
Yeah.
I wonder
maybe that was
there.
And then our homeless kid's name is Joe.
Joe, yep.
Joe is kind of like hanging around this like rich girl's home again for
this.
Not
he
really
stares
clear
at
why.
This little girl who's about his age, but still, it's a little creepy.
He's fascinated with her.
She's this rich girl. I think is the idea obviously that he's got a crush on her, but it's also I think because he's poor and he's jealous of what she has.
When she's kind of into it too, she's kind of
yeah,
checking
she's like,
him
oh,
out.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, look at the poor little scallywag on the corner.
Yeah, he looks like a bad boy. And luckily, the rich girl's mom, who has my favorite line
it's
in this
not
whole
mom,
movie,
it's a nanny.
I'm sorry,
nanny,
it's a,
yeah,
it's a
yeah.
nanny, the nanny, the nanny, who's like the most like pain in the butt character. Great line says, "Quote: I'm taking my coffee to the library so I can watch Masterpiece Theater. Make sure you learn these Latin verbs."
Boy, Andy Wolf's nightmare, huh? Latin verbs.
It's like the most pretentious thing I've ever heard in a movie. I'm like, okay.
Masterpiece.
Thanks for clearing that up. So the little girl goes out. She gives him.
Well, I like the line though, where the nanny and the mother, you know, the nanny and the girl are sitting there, and the kid's looking in there, and she's like, "I can't eat another bite." You know, they're like hammering away at this like. You know,
we get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Yeah.
She leaves
and he's like
flicking
his lips out there.
And
give this to the cats.
And Coca-Cola.
Oh, yeah. That's why we're setting this up. Yeah. This is the best product placement I've ever seen. She leaves him a can of Coke.
She actually twists the can.
She twists the can so you can see the Coke label. And then Joe has to pick this can up in the weirdest way any human hand has picked anything up so that you can see the Coke label while he's bringing it to his mouth.
I have expected.
Way,
go,
my father's drinking out of a Pepsi 2-liter bottle right now.
Thank God no one can see it.
2-liter.
And is this where Santa enters the Joe storyline?
Let's go back and talk about Lithgow.
We're not even there yet. I mean, first though, Dudley Moore does his assembly line thing.
Yes.
And then at first it works, and then it falls apart.
That's coming up though, because we've already met Lithgow at this point.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
Yes, we have.
Dudley Moore doesn't.
Dudley Moore.
Listen,
I know
listen,
there's the Senate hearing scene.
Listen.
This is how bad this movie is structured.
No, because
Lithgow doesn't come
as soon as 85 comes up, you see Lithgow. No. He's like the first thing you see.
I just watched the movie an hour ago, I'm telling you.
I watched it last night.
No, the first thing you see is
you also think Fight Club has British accents.
No, this is why I'm saying how bad this movie is structured. Lithgow doesn't pop up until Dudley Moore leaves.
And Dudley Moore ends up leaving because his
basically
Santa
what
happens.
Okay, let's just establish let's just establish.
Here's the thing about this movie
because it's so poorly structured.
But here's the thing about this movie is there's no time. You can't tell what every day is Christmas. Yeah. It's Christmas, and then the next scene
it's like
Christmas.
It's a sliding time scale.
And then the next one it's Christmas again. So you know you don't know when things take place.
There's a great part though. I laughed. I actually rewound this part when. The kids' toys are falling apart in the street.
Oh, yeah. Well,
there's like
a, the bus comes along.
Four-year-old boy in the middle of the street with his wagon. And a school bus gets like
runs it over.
5 inches from the kid. runs over his wagon.
I laughed at that.
Just to catch us up, what happened was Santa went with Dudley Moore and his automated assembly line toy production technique. He delivers all these toys, which still look like these crazy, like old school
wooden
1800s toys. And shock, you know, Dudley Moore's assembly line technique doesn't work. All the toys start falling apart in a really weird, like, montage.
Santa and Dudley Moore is exiled from the
Dudley
kingdom.
Moore
of
resigns.
Yeah.
Oh,
he resigns. Jesus. He resigns.
Dudley Moore resigns from the North Pole. Hands in his paperwork, says, I'm resigning from the North Pole to take opportunities elsewhere. I'm taking my talents south.
The south part of the world.
And Santa's like, okay. And now there's this big PR backlash against Santa. You know, kids are like,
is Santa's real?
Santa's...
They asked Santa, should we release a statement about the toys? Like, I didn't know Santa could release statements. Yeah. What does that look like?
Yeah.
Imagine if you checked your email one day and saw like a statement from Santa Claus.
For further inquiries, contact the North Pole.
So he leaves, and that's when
Lithgow comes in.
Where,
it's like, I want to say before we get into John Lithgow that this guy is a great actor. I think he was put in a horrible movie.
Wow, he took it over the top.
He really does. I think he did it because he knew that the movie was kind of bad. I think he's the MVP. Because you can tell at least he's having fun with it.
Well, he knew
it.
Like,
of all the actors in the film,
he
seems to be the one who's
like,
okay, this isn't serious. I'm just going to play this over the top.
In a better movie, maybe. I mean, he's giving it 100%, but it's
not his fault. It's the movie's fault.
Spoiler alert, part of the structural problems with this movie is Santa and John Lithgow never have a scene together.
They're
never in a scene at the same time. The guy who's supposedly your hero and your villain never communicate. In fact, by the end of the movie, it's questionable if Santa even knows who John Lithgow is.
You don't bring the villain until almost an hour into the damn movie either.
Well, that too.
So basically we get John Lithgow is a toy company owner.
Yes.
He's being confronted by a Senate hearing about the quality of his product
in which they shamelessly rip off a Saturday Night
Live. Right. I was saying, apparently they put glass in teddy bears now.
Yeah.
Look at this teddy bear. They ripped the off sawdust the teddy bear and glass screws. And glass.
What is even the point of putting that in the teddy bear? I mean, is that really that? Is the fluff in the teddy bear? Yeah, is the fluff in the teddy bear that expensive?
Right. I mean, I would think putting like nails in there would actually be more expensive than other materials.
Well, they imply that he's this bad, shady guy who now has to try to repair his image, but still be evil in the process.
Right.
And Dudley Moore, Patch, for some reason, it's not clear, he just pops in, sees
in New York City.
Z Toys and says, I'll go there, and pops there. I mean,
because
he just sees them like, oh, toys, pop, and then went to
Z Toys. No, because he pops in front of the thing, and they're taking all the toys away because they're being recalled, and he says something like,
I can make quality toys.
They must be, you know, flying off the shelves. He must make great toys, and so he wants to work with his company.
Yeah,
I missed that part.
I was being slowly
worn down at this point.
Yeah. In the running concurrent yet totally separate storyline of Santa meets this homeless kid Joe, who Joe is initially
apparently the one
like,
homeless kid in all of the country. Yeah,
it was a really good economic times. There was just one homeless kid.
He's homeless.
The only one Santa cares about.
And we get here again. A trademark of all Salkind movies, which is just a random scene of two characters flying around because everyone enjoys flying.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
They spent all that money on the flying rig for Superman. They had to get as much use out of that sucker as possible.
I am convinced in the background shots in this are shots, you know, done for Superman. And they, I mean, this is no different than Superman flying Lois Lane around.
Right, yeah. And the only point to that was to establish the super duper looper.
Yes.
Which he did. It was in comeback.
Only reason for that scene because we had to get that recall.
We're going to have a lot to talk about with the super duper looper. And also, what's really troubling to me about all of this is Santa seems shockingly unconcerned with the fact that Joe is homeless.
He doesn't seem to know what homeless is.
He's
shocked.
I want to show you the spirit of Christmas by taking you on dangerous stunts in my sleigh without a seatbelt.
And then leaving you homeless still.
Yeah.
All right, well, this was fun.
Didn't give him a present either.
Didn't even give him a hot sandwich. I mean, this guy's a jerk.
Nothing. Joe has no place to live. And Santa's like, all right, see you later, kid.
It would make more sense as if Santa should come back to the workshop.
He says, I'll see you next year. If I was Joe, I'd be like, thanks. If I'm still alive next year, I don't have anywhere to live.
Christmas is every day in this movie, so not that long. Away.
I hope I make it a year, Santa. On the street.
Might die from consumption or something. Yeah. Don't worry.
Yeah.
Consumption? Do people die from consumption anymore?
I don't know. I can't remember. 1985.
I take it from a Roman. It was 1985.
Okay, thank you.
Right around this time, too, I noticed this is a kids' movie where twice in the first hour we see people drinking booze out of a paper bag. They don't see
that. Yeah, I don't mind. That was the 80s. Right. We did that in the 80s. I don't mind that in comedies.
Oh, okay. Right,
well, alcoholism is funny.
Yeah, that's hilarious.
Yeah, why did Santa not give Joe a present? He gave every child a present
except for a homeless kid, I guess.
I thought the idea was that Joe didn't
send him a letter.
Didn't ask for anything, but Joe doesn't believe in Christmas, and then Santa gives him the ride on the sleigh, and that's his present.
Saying, don't you have like a couple of toys? Yeah. That's just in case.
And he takes him with him on the deliveries, and he meets the little girl, and he leaves him with the girl. Yeah, he doesn't leave him on the street. He leaves him with the girl.
He pretty much takes him around. He pretty much takes him around and says, hey, look what everyone else has. Look at all these other kids. They have all these gifts.
Here's a rich kid.
Santa's basically saying, Joe, I'm sorry.
You'll never have this.
We're basically saying, like, you would
this
get
is
a,
what you're missing
you
out.
Would get a toy too if you had a chimney.
Sorry.
Don't have a chimney.
It's the chimney clause.
If you could get a chimney, you'd be in much better shape.
That would really do it.
Yeah.
Then we go through another year of just a depressed Santa. Santa's depressed.
Well, this boy's depressed
because no one believes in his toys.
He's depressed.
John Lithgow now has Dudley Moore working for him, and he's planning on making Christmas two.
But we got to talk about Dudley Moore's pitch meeting. Dudley Moore's pitch to John Lithgow. Dudley Moore sells John Lithgow on producing this whole like elaborate business model based on, quote, something special. There's no details
given. So far as Lithgow is concerned, this is just some nut who walked in off the street. He hasn't proven his magical elfness yet.
John Lithgow is committing to a multi-million dollar production plan that he knows nothing about. And that just
in like 5 minutes, he convinces him, hey, let's make a bunch of toys for free and buy advertising on every channel
in the world.
He needs
a better PR because all his toys
He's desperate for PR, so he wants to give away all the toys this year for free to show that he's a good guy.
It's like, it's just lollipops.
Well, I know.
Glowing lollipop. If I'm John Lithgow, I'd have a lot of concerns. Why is this lollipop glowing? What makes it glow? I'm in trouble for handing out dangerous toys, and you're asking me to give kids a glowing lollipop that may or may not be radioactive?
What about the parents?
Oh,
well, I mean, you're like, wait, kid, this is glowing. I don't know. You might not want to put that in your mouth.
You know what? Someone, a magic glowing lollipop showed up. I don't know how far Nancy Reagan had made it on the Just Say No to Drugs campaign, but this should have been a red
flag.
That
very very good commercial that they made. The Elf Surrounded by Hot Chick commercial.
That was a good one.
Dudley Moore reads a script off a teleprompter in monotone. It took me a minute to realize that he was doing that on purpose in this commercial. Because he seemed to be doing it for the rest of the movie, not on purpose.
Yeah, he was.
And now Santa's like all depressed. He's like, oh, I think everybody prefers a weird lollipop to my old 1850s style toys.
Christmas is over. No one wants Christmas anymore.
I'm old hat. You know, my green and yellow wagons I've been giving to like 12-year-old kids aren't a big hit anymore. Because that's what the kids want.
I guess after 700 years, we're gonna have to reevaluate.
Yeah. And then, okay, and somewhere in here it's revealed that the lollipops make kids fly, right?
Can we tell you?
No one seems to be too concerned about this. No one's troubled by this. No. Everyone's like, this is fantastic. A glowing lollipop, a stranger left under my Christmas tree
made
my
kid
float.
How did they get all the lollipops to people anyway?
Never explained.
No, Dudley Moore used his rocket car.
But he does fly. He never.
So he has Santa powers too to like stop time and give lollipops.
I think the implication was that he did somehow deliver these toys.
He did. But he can't stop time and he's not magical.
So Burgess Meredith didn't tell him that he was
got time.
You know, had all these magical powers.
I do love.
He's not even fit.
Maybe
to hold
that
Burgess
was
Meredith's
one of the deleted
beard.
Scenes, Andy.
I do love John Lithgow in that scene too, where he's taken off in the car, and I can't remember what he's yelling at him, but he's yelling like, "You got it, kid!
Oh my God!
You got it! When Dudley Moore takes off in the flying car, John Lithgow and his assistant are going crazy. It's the greatest thing they've ever seen. It's like a football pep rally.
It is actually. It would be pretty cool though in real life.
But if you're Dudley Moore, you must be like, I don't need your encouragement. I know my car can fly. You yelling at me doesn't help things at all. Like, in fact, you're just stressing me. I made it there so it can fly.
At this point, this movie's so out of control.
It's
all over the place.
Oh, it's everywhere. Well, for a movie called Santa Claus the Movie, Santa is firmly in the backseat of this film.
Well, and for some reason now, John Lithgow wants to end Santa. Like he wants
For some reason, Santa Claus is over.
Yeah, right. He wants to like push him out of the, you know, get rid of him.
Well, so Dudley's
competition. If you run a toy company and you can't compete with like wooden ponies, you probably should get out of this. I wish he would stop making those damn wooden toys from the 1300s. I can't compete.
Yeah. No, Santa comes
that
along
wooden
once
yo-yo. No one else can produce a wooden yo-yo like he can.
Santa comes around once a year, and that's a big threat to Lithgow's company.
Year-round operation of making modern toys. Well, and Jack referenced it earlier. So Dudley Moore comes in to have a meeting with John Lithgow, and they're talking about how wildly successful their free, glowing, flying lollipops are. And so Dudley Moore announces, he's like, all right, I think my work here is done. I'm going back to the North Pole. I think I've proved what I came here to prove, which I don't know what it was, but I proved something.
Santa, no, he's a good assistant, I guess.
He proved that he can.
But he didn't make a toy. He made a lollipop.
He made a lollipop.
It's not a toy.
And it was kind of an irresponsible one because it made the
and
kids
Santa
fly.
Didn't right. want him to leave the North Pole anyways.
Santa never fired Dudley Moore. Yeah. We should make
just left.
So Dudley Moore is going
it's
back.
It's a pride thing.
It's not really clear why he left then, but and John Lithgow's like, you can't go anywhere. We need more. And they kindly hatched the idea for Christmas 2. Which Dudley
which is
Moore,
in like February
well, even, and even Dudley
March.
Even Dudley Moore's March, like Christmas 2 what are you talking like yeah. This doesn't make any sense
yeah Dudley Moore's like I don't
and apparently
know
Christmas
this.
2 is just gonna be giving kids candy canes
in yeah. March
because they're just making
that are
canes.
Even more special
yeah.
There's a lot of drug imagery in this. There was
more than Alice in Wonderland.
Because because he wants
I was
to give
to reference that.
He wants to give the first round for free to get the kids hooked, and now he's selling it for like hundreds of dollars for a second. So it is very drug. Drug related here.
There's also can we just talk about the quick scene where we're jumping all over the place because the movie's jumping all over the place. It is like there's like three storylines. There's like a Santa storyline.
The kids.
There's the homeless Joe storyline and the Dudley Moore.
Homeless Joe from Haribo. Yeah.
And they never really intersect cleanly. Like they kind of like force these storylines together at times. But
well, then you find out.
This I love Dill the second time. I forgot about that. Second time Santa picks up Joe.
Yes.
He gives him a
line
wooden,
in the movie.
Oh,
a wooden statue.
He does. He of
I want a sandwich, like I said.
He's been homeless for a year.
I want a ham.
He gives Joe his Christmas present the next year is a hand-carved statue of Dudley Moore.
Dudley Moore.
What a terrible gift.
It's not even painted.
It's
Joe loves it, though. Joe's like,
Joe doesn't even know who Dudley Moore is.
No. If I was Joe, I'd be like, hey, you know what else is good, Santa? Transformers. Really like Transformers. Thank you.
Food is really nice.
Hey, I can apartment be nice.
I can carve the statue into a steak to defend myself on the streets. Thanks, Santa.
Yeah. So, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to put this on the mantle. Oh, I don't have a mantle.
Because I don't have a chimney.
I'm homeless. Thanks.
Yeah, where am I going to put this freaking thing?
Yeah. So Joe, by the way,
and Joe is completely ecstatic.
Yeah, Santa's, and he's psyched. Santa's still totally unconcerned about Joe's chronic homelessness.
Chronic homelessness. No, my favorite line from the movie was when Santa visits him again, and whatever the heck that rich girl's name is, who he's kind of...
Corny? Her name's Corny or
Corny,
something.
Corny,
like
yeah.
Did anyone else notice that? Weird, yeah. Did anyone else notice the inconsistency of her dental work? Now, I know this sounds ridiculous. Yes. But when she's first introduced, no braces. When we see her again, braces. When we see her again a third time, no braces. But it's not like time flew. It was the same Christmas.
Yeah.
You don't know that, though, because...
I suppose.
Maybe she had Invisalign or, like, a retainer or something.
Maybe.
I was looking at it.
That was a cut story.
It's just something I noticed for some reason. I noticed that her braces kept going on and off.
I have this amazing new product. It fixes kids' teeth.
Teeth.
It fixes kids' teeth. No, I can't freaking...
So here's where...
Wait, I got to get to my favorite line. Oh, yeah. Sorry.
So when Santa asked Joe if he's been seeing Braces Girl, he's like, yeah. We've been seeing each other.
Yeah.
Giving it to 40. Wow, that was...
Too bad she's not been giving him a bed to sleep in.
Yeah.
And then there's that scene later where she like invites him up to her bedroom.
Oh, that's what I'm about to like
it's all too familiar to walk up to that bedroom.
Come on up.
This is another...
The red light's on.
He's like on the bed seductively. Yeah. I was expecting you.
I wrote down this dialogue. Because it shows that the movie is aware of the problem that homelessness is. Because here's the dialogue. Joe visits the rich girl, and she's like, and he's like looking like movie sick. Because, you know, when you're like movie sick, you're like sweating and like, you know, going, everything's awful. And she's like, you're burning up. He's like, I'll be all right. You stay out there and you'll be dead. Like, whoa.
That escalated quickly.
Very serious.
And she takes him to the basement, which is cold and damp, I'm assuming.
She takes him to the basement.
Well, you find out, too, before this, that John Lithgow is this girl's step-uncle.
Which was a shock.
Right.
Yes.
I couldn't believe it.
By a shocking zoom, too.
That's yeah. Twist.
Like which, a kung fu
up
movie
until
zoom.
That point, I still did not understand her, whatever her family situation was. Right. Yeah.
So, because it's at this point now, she's in the basement with Joe doing whatever they're doing.
Wait, she's in the basement with Joe. She takes Joe's temperature. Doing. Let's talk about this scene, too. Think about this math. She takes Joe's temperature and goes, 99 degrees, you have a temperature. Joe's response is, 4 dopey points. Like, wait, 4? Joe's normal temperature is 96 degrees?
I think he meant 0.4.
I would say, yeah.
Because it's 98.6
is your regular body temperature. For a second, I was like, if his normal body temperature is 96, homelessness is
he's
really
a cold blooded.
Taking a toll
he's cold-blooded, Joe is.
Yeah. Cold-blooded, he's 96. He has a fever when he's 99.
And but Joe is sick. So Joe, okay, well, this scene is like, there's so much going on in this scene. So John Lithgow and his assistant at 3 in the morning.
His assistant shows up at his house.
At 3 in the morning.
Find out that the candy cane's exploding.
But he doesn't say that first. The assistant comes in and they talk about other things. Then the assistant and John Lithgow hear Joe sneeze and they're like, someone's in the basement, and they freak out. They like capture Joe in the basement, but the little girl like hides, and they like somebody takes Joe. Another henchman, takes Joe away.
One thing here: if the little girl is living in the house and Joe's the outsider,
right.
Why wouldn't they hide Joe?
Right.
And have the little girl be the one that they find.
So my watch.
And then she comes up with some excuse.
Why doesn't Joe hide? And the girl would say, "Oh, I sneezed. And I was down here getting something."
That could have been easily avoided.
Right. They have to set up this.
Oh shoot! They know I'm in my own house. I gotta hide. Here, outsider. Take the phone for this one.
Yeah. Well, because they have to set up this like super awkward confrontation. So Joe gets taken away. Like, I don't know why they don't call the police. They just
He doesn't.
They have not talked about the plan.
Oh, no, that's right.
I just watched the movie an hour ago.
Well, yeah. I know Lithgow wants to put.
He wants to put him on ice. He wants to put Joe on ice.
He overheard something. He overheard.
No. Joe doesn't. Joe doesn't actually.
No, at that point, yeah, because
he overheard him saying he wants to put Santa Claus.
Yeah, because Lick goes in, is getting food out of his fridge, going, Santa Claus is finished or whatever.
Right. So he overhears that. So for that reason, you got to put the kid on. You got to tie him up in the basement.
Well, it's never clear why to tie him up, but. Because then, after Joe is taken away, then John Lithgow's like accountant tells him, "Hey, by the way, canes are incredibly explosive
which
and blew
forever
up a factory."
For them to tell him.
Yeah,
and which they takes forever. Have a but comedic
they,
moment there.
The reason it takes forever is because they can't have Joe know. They need Joe to be in trouble, but Joe can't know the candy canes are explosive, so they have to get Joe out of the. Like the logic of it is insane. So the candy canes are explosive. And there's other
highly unstable.
When they're exposed to heat,
right?
Which is very upsetting to John Lithgow because
kids probably shouldn't be eating them then.
explode. Their stomach isn't hot, you know. And John Lithgow is a great one. He's like, "We have millions of dollars pouring in every day, most of it in cash." I'm like, wait, what?
Yeah, I was saying that
where
too.
Where are the other $1 million coming in from? Like, most of it in like cash? You know, gold
property
gold
value. Or,
yeah. Special, like, you know,
doubloons.
Barter, you know,
pesos. Yeah.
And then they get into this creepy conversation because you know what else kids are fascinated by? Kids in 1985 love talking about what countries have extradition treaties with the U.S. and the exact logistics of the U.S.'s relationship with Brazil and how and if they will extradite known felons. I imagine kids watch this movie being like, what are we hearing about?
It's an educational movie.
I liked it better when we were in Santa's workshop. Yeah.
Mommy, what's extradition?
Mommy, what does Joe mean when he says he and Cornelius haven't seen each other? Yeah, they've been seeing each other. What does that mean?
And also, the accountants, there's even a conversation about string bikinis in here, too.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's the other big pitch on Brazil.
He's convincing his buddy, don't worry about getting in trouble because we'll just go to Brazil where it's sunny and there's hot women and there's no extradition treaties.
It's for the adults. Yeah. It's for the adults in the audience.
And some very confused kids. So Joe is taken to John Lithgow's factory.
Yes.
Where he is tied up to a boiler. Though Joe doesn't know anything about what is going on, other than that John Lithgow wants to gain a competitive edge in the marketplace over
That's
Santa.
That's all he knows. Right?
Joe's probably like, "Hey, I'm in a warm factory, better than being out in the cold." I mean,
boy, this is actually an upgrade for Joe.
Yeah, this isn't terrible.
Yeah,
he was probably crap when
What's
he heard put
about?
On.
I don't know.
He's like, "I don't want to be put on ice," but then he gets to the warm factory. He's like, "Yeah,
yeah." Yeah, he's like, "Okay,
probably get more food here than I do on the freaking Santa Claus."
Yeah, this is arguably
he's being treated better by John Lithgow than Santa Claus.
Yeah, John Lithgow put a roof over his head.
Yeah.
So the little girl sends a letter to Santa, which luckily is delivered instantaneously.
Which they are. They always are.
They always are. They have
Santa Claus.
That the post office should be the one feeling threatened by Santa with their freaking mail delivery service.
I know.
Jeez,
I know.
He's
really cutting edge.
It's like email before email.
Yeah. Yeah.
I wonder how many planes go down with Santa letters like going into their engines as they're flying through the air.
That's true. That must be a real
deleted scene.
Yeah. And there's a great scene where Santa just reads this letter because they do establish
depressed Santa Claus, by the way.
He's very depressed.
For the fifth time in this movie.
Because at this point, he's looking over pie charts and stuff, and he's like, "Oh boy, yeah. our market share is down significantly. Our financials look bad. I think the North Pole was over leveraged.
Yeah,
this you see Santa shredding business documents furiously. Yeah.
The SEC is breathing down my neck.
I knew this faulty accounting would come back to bite us one day."
So they established that it's like, I can't remember what time of year it is, like mid-February?
It's always Christmas.
I think somebody said it was January.
That's what it is.
Okay.
2 weeks later.
So it's January. So it's mid-January.
The only time reference we get in the entire movie, by the way.
In the whole film. Santa gets this letter, he reads it, and Santa just instantly goes, "Joe needs me!" To which I'm sure the elves are like, "Who's Joe?" Like, why is this?
Not that homeless guy you stiff every year.
Yeah. Yeah. Why is this our problem?
Joe needs you all.
And why would you're Santa?
Okay. Yeah, no. Why so important? Yeah. No,
Joe didn't write a letter. Santa doesn't do anything without a letter.
Here's one. Yeah. Is it safe to assume that Joe isn't the only child who's in incredible peril in the world? Why would Santa Claus only help Joe?
Only Joe.
Yeah,
it was a really good time. I'm telling you,
why didn't that little girl write a letter to Santa saying, "Can you give Joe a home?"
Or a letter to the police.
That makes more sense.
Well, she did call the police, though.
Oh, okay.
I guess that's why they showed up at the...
That's right. They just showed up at the end, all of a sudden.
Oh, she said she called police, but I don't think they believe me. Yeah, when Santa Claus shows up to get her,
you're right.
She's like, "I called the police, but I don't think they believe me." And then all of a sudden the cops are there.
You're
right. I guess because he has exploding candy canes, they believe the... You know, 8-year-old girl.
An 8-year-old girl called them at 4 a.m.
Right.
That her uncle had an explosive.
I mean, they're probably
little girl. Are you sure you weren't just dreaming?
I mean, you have to consider though. They live
they needed to put that scene in the movie. I would have enjoyed that.
Yeah, that would have been great.
Yeah.
You have to realize they're living in a world now where people can fly with lollipops. Well, so why not exploding candy canes?
It's true. And I don't think I've seen a scene since Spider-Man 3. Where two characters who initially hate each other come together so faster quickly. Than Dudley Moore and Joe. Where Joe is ready to kill Dudley Moore for making Santa depressed, and 5 minutes later they are best friends. They're loving it.
Whoa, your rocket car is awesome.
Yeah, Dudley Moore's like, "I didn't want to put Santa out of business. I wanted to help him." Oh, okay. We can be best friends then. Yeah,
helping him by going to the competition and making exploding candy canes.
A terrible callback. Like, somehow Joe has been carrying around the wooden statue that Santa gave him.
Hey, Joe, where have you been holding that statue?
Yeah, it's like a foot tall statue.
It's really big. It's like, yeah. And Dudley Moore looks at it and is like, "This is a carving of me. Santa does like me."
But he never said he hated him.
Right,
he never said
he hated him. Santa
he
never fired him.
Him.
Right. Yeah. Right. In fact, I think Santa didn't want
him
to leave.
That's why it doesn't make any freaking sense. This plot just doesn't make any sense.
No, no.
Because there was never anything like that in this movie. And either way, him and Dudley Moore having any problems or him and Lithgow having any problems, or there's no establishment of any issues. Yeah.
And then you're right. I have a note here. Why are the police showing up at John?
Well, that's because the little girl called them at 4 a.m. and said,
"Did they hear about the? Did the explosion happen? Or were they just responding to that?
No, because earlier they say the day before.
They say the explosion happened, but Dudley Moore didn't hear it. They say Patch didn't hear the explosion
because he was.
Yeah, how did he not
room.
Hear the explosion?
Room.
How did
he not hear an explosion?
I was thinking that too.
Apparently, the whole factory blew up, but he's in another room.
Dudley Moore's magical powers and everything but hearing.
He's in the bomb shelter.
Have we also talked about how Dudley Moore's crazy flying car is also his bed? Have we talked about that?
Yeah. He pulled the sheets up. There's like the door up to his chin.
It's his bed.
How uncomfortable is that?
You're sleeping with your back completely and arms completely flat on the bed.
Yeah, especially also, what makes the rocket car go? There's no way there's any padding in his crazy rocket car.
No, there's certainly no seatbelts.
Nor seatbelts.
No, there are seatbelts.
He tells him to buckle up.
He tells him to put a seatbelt on.
Oh, okay, there you
safety
go.
First. Never mind.
But then, of course, the cops show up, and John Lithgow eats the candy canes.
And jumps out the window.
To get away from the cops.
Flies away.
"You'll never get me alive. I'm going to eat these explosive candy canes that I've never tested before."
Right.
So on the off chance that it'll let me fly, and of course, the Salkinds get to use that flying rig again.
It was a very Shawshank Redemption ending.
It is.
With the guy being confronted in his office running from the cops.
Yeah. Joe and Dudley Moore are in Dudley Moore's magic flying car because they want to go up to the North Pole because now Dudley Moore somehow has realized that Santa likes him.
And for some reason, what is he using?
Wait,
the candy canes for fuel or something?
They're racing to the North Pole because Dudley Moore, after seeing the wooden statue that Santa carved, realized that Santa does like him.
He wanted to go to the North
Pole. But they're driving like with intensity. There's something like...
He was going to leave and go to the North Pole.
Right.
But he convinced him.
And then Joe also convinced him that the candy canes were a bad idea.
So, no, they took the candy canes to give to Santa so that way Santa would be able to take a year off because they just give the candy canes.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, this movie is working so
hard. Dudley Moore doesn't know about the danger of the candy canes because he didn't hear the...
Now I'm putting this together, I'm like, okay, so they had to make sure Joe didn't know the candy canes are dangerous. So if Joe doesn't know the candy canes are dangerous, Dudley Moore can't know the candy canes are dangerous, but everyone else has to know.
But they do know that John Lithgow is dangerous. So why didn't they use Dudley Moore's Christmas powers to like try to Home Alone style catch, you know, with like wonky wooden traps and stuff? Why don't they try to catch John Lithgow's character?
Well, because Joe also doesn't know that he's dangerous. Joe just knows that Dudley Moore...
He tied him up in the basement!
Well, that's true.
Joe knows he's dangerous. Dudley Moore doesn't. Santa, maybe. The police, maybe.
Yeah.
So now they're racing to the North Pole.
We need a chart to know who knows what is dangerous.
If you think about this too, it is not clear, even at the end of this movie, that Santa even knows who John Lithgow really is.
I don't think he does.
He never does.
Yeah.
They never share a scene.
They have no
clue. And at this point, John Lithgow just...
He's floating away.
Floating away.
And then, yes.
And I said, please don't, in the end, please don't.
And of course they did. We'll get to that.
Yeah.
They did.
Oh, they did. No, please.
And we need to talk about the craziest scene. I mean, this movie, which started off, again, we should reference, this started off as a pretty good movie. It is so far off the rails by the end.
Please end.
We get a,
I wanted to drive that freaking wooden statue of Dudley Moore right into my heart at this point.
Yeah. Because we get an extended chase scene with Santa and the little girl in his sleigh chasing Dudley Moore and Joe in the car.
Why are they driving so fast?
I don't know.
I think the candy cane fuel. They used the candy canes as fuel and the car was going out of control, I think is what was
going on,
right?
I know the callback for the loop-de-loops coming, but I'm like, how the hell would the super duper
It's the super duper
loop.
Oh, we're going to talk about
that. How would that help you out at this point? How's that going to help you?
We're going to talk about that in a minute, because that is madness.
It makes no time.
Right, doesn't it?
Well, because all right, first of all, they chased them.
Just let's get to that.
Let's go real quick.
There's nothing else.
They chased them across the whole globe to catch up with them.
And the candy canes are ready to explode in the back of the car. Blah, 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 blah.
Right. Okay.
So we get to the super duper loopy loop.
Well, because
Santa Claus says there's only one way to. There's only one thing. There's a super duper loopy loop. He super duper loopy loops underneath the car. And doesn't say, hey, jump down.
Right.
No, he keeps going.
Your car's going to explode. Jump in.
Jump out. That keeps going.
Yep.
Yeah, they
wait for it to explode.
Why?
Santa's sleigh is directly underneath the car. He knows it's going to blow up. And he could just say, jump out of the car. Instead, they do a loop-de-loop. While they're in the loop-de-loop, the car explodes. Actually blows up.
Yep. I was like, what?
Risking everyone's life.
Right.
So to understand Santa's theory, his theory is we need to do a loop-de-loop, and I need to time it for when the car explodes so we can catch them like a catcher's mitt out of thin air if they are not blown up when the candy canes blow up.
Right.
It would be as if you're chasing someone on foot, and then to catch them, you pass them, circle around them, and then go back behind them again.
Because you know they're about to trip.
Right.
They're going to trip. I know they're going to trip. I'm going to go around them. He's going to trip. No, I got it.
Yeah. The most dangerous rescue ever.
I know, when I saw the car blow off, I was like, oh. I really didn't see that coming.
And then the keeper...
And they just get shot in the air instead of actually... Like, who... Who gets shot in the air when something explodes?
Yeah, it explodes. They just kind of like they're like.
Yeah, it was like an ejection scene. Right.
And when Dudley Moore and Joe land in Santa's sleigh, Dudley Moore doesn't go, "Why did my car just blow up?" Would that be my first question? Why did my car just explode midair? And how did you know to be here? No one is asking.
How did you time that off?
Yeah. Why did you do it as a loop de loop? My car just blew up.
Dumbass, next time tell me to jump out.
Well, my next question, I would have wanted to ask Santa, did you make my car blow up?
Maybe Santa doesn't like me.
Yeah. Oh.
And then the movie just ends.
Oh, yeah.
Well, no, he kidnaps the two kids and then it ends.
Well, you know, but I'm saying that's just pretty much it.
Yeah.
The kids are, after that, can we stay for the year? Some joke with Dooley, the elf there.
And he makes a good teacher, and they're like, school!
So, do these kids now live forever, too, or are they just going to die?
No, I said they're going to be there for the year.
Maybe they don't age.
So he's abducted these two kids for a year. Now, the homeless kid, this is a better situation, but for the girl who has, you know, parents or whatever.
No, she doesn't have parents.
Well, her uncle's John.
Her uncle's in space.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah. No, he's not in space yet.
And she just has the nanny who likes to watch Masterpiece Theater.
I'm like, oh, please don't. Because I'm like, oh, they haven't said what happened to John Lithgow. Please don't have him in space. Yep. That's just stupid.
Well, for the second movie we've seen in this podcast with a Salkind connection, we've learned you do not need a spacesuit to breathe in space or talk.
You don't break the atmosphere, no problem.
Yeah, you can just float away.
He's just floating into oblivion. Hey, what's going on? Get me down. Oh, my God. Yeah. And he's in space. He's not in the upper atmosphere. Yeah. He is out of the bonds of the earthly atmosphere, and he's floating out there.
I wish Superman and Neutron Man had flown by.
That would have been great.
That would have been fantastic. Because I think we can all agree that clearly it's a hoax perpetrated by NASA that you need spacesuits.
Oh,
it's
clearly definitely not. I don't know. We don't have any proof that.
Yeah, the moon landings were faked, and you don't need a spacesuit. Mm. John Lithgow can just float away, talking in the vacuum of space about things.
I'm gonna test this out. I'm gonna go out on the outside, eat some candy canes, see how far I can make it.
Yeah, just don't go near a heat source or your stomach will blow.
That's right.
And that's pretty. Also,
that's
it, like,
Santa Claus
there's. I would really like to see a follow-up movie, like a Kramer versus Kramer movie, about how these kids get to live at the North Pole and what the legal ramifications of that are. You know, Child Protective Services showing up at the North Pole, wanting to know what's going on there. That would be a fantastic sequel.
We don't need any more child crime
and
stories.
The problem with this whole movie, the structure-wise, is like you cut off the first 30 minutes. You don't need to establish how Santa Claus. It had nothing to do with the damn movie. You could have started with Santa Claus Workshop and these two elves competing for assistant.
Yeah.
You bring John Lithgow in way up further somehow and establish some kind of a thing between him and Santa Claus.
But see, I'm going to disagree with you for a second. I think, I don't know if Cody agrees with me, but I think the origin story was stronger. And if they had
stronger
this,
for the
avoid
story,
the real world.
But
story
they,
at all.
They needed a villain, but I think had the
like
villain.
Like a fantasy
been,
villain.
A fantasy. It
like Jack
more
Frost
magic based. Like,
yeah, but the origin, you didn't need to tell the story they were telling in the end.
They didn't need to tell that story is what I'm
and
saying.
And you could have told the origin story in a different way in the movie somewhere.
Well, maybe.
You could have told the origin story and be like, okay, there's the origin of Santa
putting
Claus.
Putting this in the real world is where, I mean, like, this movie is fascinated with production line techniques, like stock prices, you know, like market share.
Extradition
like,
treaties.
I mean, it's fascinated with all these concepts that have nothing to do with Santa Claus. Right. I mean, if you didn't get the gist from us
advertising,
talking about this movie,
television advertising,
marketing, it's you know modern marketing techniques. Santa Claus is barely in the second half of this film at all.
Yeah, whenever they cut to him, he's just sitting looking depressed.
And the thing too is most holiday movies have a purpose, like somebody learns something, like you know, Elf with Will Ferrell, the father learns how to be more affectionate.
John Lithgow learned he can breathe in space.
Well, I guess maybe that's it.
Yeah, no one really.
But
yeah, there's
they
not
don't.
Really
there's
a
nothing
lesson.
In the end. Like, oh, this person learned that. Or this person learned that. There's nothing.
There's really nothing.
It just kind of like
Joe
well,
has a home.
No, he doesn't. He's going.
He's going to be at the North Pole for a year, and then he's going to be back on the street.
Yeah, he'll be
right back on the street.
Yeah, a year later. He's all right.
I hope you enjoy all that food and warmth.
See you next year.
Scrounging for cans of Coke.
Yeah. Right. So, no, we got anything or learned anything in this thing.
Yeah, that's pretty. Well, I did learn one thing. The candy canes that are like right before they explode are clearly the same special effect technology they used for crystals in the Superman movies.
I forgot too. In that scene where the candy just before they explode in the car, they have like an Atari. You hear that Atari or Nintendo type of video game?
Oh yeah,
it's stolen from. It was like.
Yeah.
Blaringly apparent. It was like, oh my God, that was
kind
of funny, I guess. Yes. But I don't know what it had to do with anything.
Yeah. What did anything have to do with anything?
What did why did any this is much like Super Mario Brothers, why was anyone doing anything? Yeah.
Calls into question a lot of things.
We have two so wrong it's right questions this week. Two so wrong right. One of them we did with two because one of them people may know. And one of our friends on Facebook actually kind of hinted at one of the answers of this on a Facebook post. Santa in this movie.
I think Brian's looking the answer up.
I know, Brian's
cheating
right
now.
Yeah, social media cheating.
James Caan.
The guy, David Huddleston, who played Santa in this movie, is probably better known to people for another part. And not only is he better known as this part, at one point during this podcast, one of us referenced the part he's better known for.
I've seen him before, but I can't think of what... I know him and
I know another role he's in, but yeah. I don't know if it's the right one.
I saw this last night.
Well, all right, anyone, Jack, do you want to take a guess? I know
it. I'm kind of stuck where I know who he is, but I can't place him. Okay. I just didn't bother looking
up. Referenced it?
Yeah. It was actually referenced in the recording of this podcast.
What is it?
What do we reference? I know we referenced Superman, obviously, but...
No guesses? Any takers? I'm gonna say going. Andy?
The only role I know of him was like the mayor in Blazing Saddles or something.
He wasn't that, yeah.
He wasn't that.
That's where I know him from.
That wasn't right.
I'll let Cody do it because I think he was
the Big Lebowski in the Big Lebowski.
He is. Oh, the Big
yes,
Lebowski.
Yes. Now I know who he is.
Yeah. It's kind of a funny little bit of trivia. He's more of a character actor.
Interesting.
The our other So Wrong It's Right question. We're going back to music, which is a lot of fun. The song that is sung over the end credits, Christmas All Over the World.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Oh God, that was horrible.
It's sung by Sheena Easton.
Yes.
This song was written for another musical act. And not only was written for another musical act, but this other musical act actually went so far as to record a demo and was on board to do this song. And I would be fascinated to hear what this version of it would have sounded like.
Aerosmith.
No, I'm going to give you four choices. No.
AC/DC.
Aerosmith had
Devo.
It was 1985. Well, actually, when you get the other choices, those be like this. This was the original singer for Christmas. Well, not singer, but act who was going to do Christmas All Over the World, which was sung by Sheena Easton.
Bruce Springsteen.
It was either going to be Bon Jovi, Def Leppard, Queen, Michael Bolton.
Oh.
And this was not just in theory.
That's
they
a weird
actually,
grouping there. That's a weird grouping.
The musical act actually
Queen
went
is,
so far
Queen
as to
did
record...
two movie soundtracks.
Yeah, they record... A demo was recorded on this song. They weren't just, like, in principle on board for
Bon Jovi, Def Leppard, both were still big then.
Michael Bolton.
Queen was still...
Queen.
Big, yeah.
It sounds like a Michael Bolton song. I'm just going to guess first. It sounds like a Michael Bolton song. I know Queen had done two movie soundtracks at least by this point. So it could be Queen. I'm going to say Michael Bolton, though, because it sounds like a Michael Bolton song.
I was thinking Michael Bolton. I think I'm going to go with Def Leppard just because it's okay.
I'm going to say Queen because I can hear Freddie Mercury's voice singing that, and they were filming in London.
Okay.
Well, I'm going to go with Bon Jovi then.
Wow.
Each one. Wolf Family Dominance continues. Andy Wolf.
Woo! I get him every week.
And you were right. It was for
wow,
Freddie Mercury.
Close.
Except for those like two times
I
should have
gone with it because they did Flash and they did Highlander.
That's right.
So
yeah, because you complained about it one time.
Did I?
Yeah. They're kind of in a movie soundtrack phase.
Final little bit of trivia on this movie. This was planned as a franchise. The Salkinds were planning to do this as a franchise. Which
how?
Yeah, what were they going to go from there?
Santa Claus Adventures.
More Santa
Claus.
Lithgow was going to come back as a radioactive mutant.
If you think about it, this is very Superman the movie, Santa Claus the movie, origin story, villain. This is very Superman themed.
And then beginning, it just comes up Santa Claus, and so it doesn't say Santa Claus the movie.
I think it was kind of like. People started calling it Santa Claus the movie. I don't think that was the official movie title.
I might be wrong about this.
I think it is Santa Claus the movie.
I think in the
actual... It came up Santa Claus on the opening credits.
I mean, maybe they didn't write that in the credits, because I guess if you're in a movie watching it, you'd be like, that'd be kind of weird. But I think in the ads, it said Santa Claus the movie.
Because Superman is called Superman the movie, but in the opening credits, it's called Superman.
You know it's not Santa Claus.
Well, that's
oh no, was he Santa Claus? He's here.
Yeah, see the movie poster says Santa Claus the movie.
Right. Yeah, that's what the Salkinds like.
Podcast? Santa Claus the podcast?
Could be.
Santa Claus radio show?
Well, we're doing a Santa Claus podcast, yeah. So maybe.
I know, but we're not calling it the Santa Claus song.
Santa Claus the song? You don't know?
Stop the movie. I want to get out the podcast.
I'm going to go to the theater and see Santa Claus the song. I'm going to go to the theater and see Santa Claus the radio show.
Hey, the Salkinds are looking to make money wherever they could get. If they could have had Santa Claus the musical, believe me, that would have been a development.
Wasn't it Garbage Pail Kids the movie too?
Yes,
it was.
I think it was the 80s thing. Everything, the movie.
And this was also the movie. Ilya and his dad Alexander Salkind had so many problems working together in this movie. This actually split their professional relationship. Ended after this movie. Yeah.
Did they make anything after this movie?
They were
Supergirl
both,
maybe.
Supergirl was before this.
Okay.
This was, yeah, they had a bad string there. They were both credited on the Superboy TV show, but Ilya Salkind says they never actually worked together on it. They just owned the rights together. Okay. And this movie is a huge money loser. This was a $50 million movie.
What?
In 1985, yeah, this is, well, when you think about, I mean, the audio animatronic reindeer, some of the sets are pretty huge.
The sets are pretty big, yeah.
I mean, but yeah,
they built a McDonald's restaurant specifically for one shot.
They built a McDonald's in Pinewood.
Well, I can understand it because it has not become a Christmas classic. I mean, I've never watched it. Well, I've never watched it. Well, it's been 20-some years.
Well, you never know.
In England, this is considered a bit of a Christmas classic. I guess, like, it's played on Christmas Eve, like, every year.
Really?
In England. I don't.
Well, I know one person.
Hilarious.
I was like, "Oh, I love that movie!" And y'all offered the DVD to me.
Yeah,
but I've never rented it. This is the first time I watched it because something about it always like
I watched it once when I was a kid. Remember being like, "This kind of sucks," and it was never a Christmas staple in my household.
Yeah,
except for like one time when it was just kind of like new, and my parents must have rented it or something.
Right. I mean, I was right in this movie's wheelhouse. I was 11 when it came out. I remember my family seeing it in the theater, and I also remember us being kind of like, "Okay," like
it wasn't. The theater, I would have been pissed.
Well, you were also like a middle-aged man in 1985. Like, why would you be?
What's middle age?
It's all relative. It's all relative.
Yeah, you were like 41 in 1985, right?
No. Andy's like Patch. He lives forever.
That's right. That's right. Well, that is our episode for this week. We have a couple other things just to go over. One, a big plea for help. You can help Stop the Movie I Want to Get Out, the podcast. We have a fantastic new website set up by Cody Wolf at stopthemoviepodcast.podbean.com. Fantastic Podbean. Website. In setting up that new website, we lost all of our reviews on iTunes. So if you like this podcast, please give us a star review or write a review on iTunes. We would really appreciate it. We lost all of our old reviews.
Preferably good reviews. Bad reviews, please go elsewhere.
Well, if you want, whatever you want to give. We had some wonderful, wonderful reviews from fans of the show on our old iTunes account, and we unfortunately lost those in the meltdown of our old website. So we would love to have new reviews. And as always, we say please follow us on Facebook. Stop the Movie is on Facebook. As we said last week, the big pitch for why you should follow, fantastic summaries of these episodes and pictures from each episode.
Oh, yes.
The Tango and Cash one's fantastic.
The Tango and Cash picture is amazing. The Street Fighter picture is amazing. Like, I laugh out loud at all of the pictures that get posted by Jack. They are hilarious. The Tango and Cash one might be the best one. It sums up the movie perfectly.
It does. I like the 88 Minutes one with...
Minutes is also fantastic. Yeah. There's previews of upcoming movies. There's people suggesting movies to us. So Stop the Movie on Facebook. Great way to get information on this podcast. And you can follow some of the people in this room on Twitter. Not all of the people in this room, I've noticed. You can follow Jack Esterbrook.
Yep, at Jack Esterbrook, yep.
At Cody A. Wolf.
And at Wind Up Films, all on Twitter for conversation
updates. You don't have one either?
No.
Good.
Andy and Brian not on the Twitter, as we like to say.
You hold me on AOL.
That's right. You can reach Andy in several ways. Yes, if you go on CompuServe. You
can reach him through the Pony Express.
Say run alt delete wolf.
You can just write me a letter and throw it up in the air and it'll get into my chimney.
Just put my name on it.
It will get sucked up your chimney and delivered by magic.
Yeah. So I'll get it. So no need for Twitter.
That's true. It's actually a lot more effective. It doesn't limit people to 140 characters.
Right. Exactly.
You can write as much as you want.
Yeah. Write as much as you want.
Yeah.
Till your ink runs dry.
Mm-hmm.
Very true.
Till your quill runs dry.
We have lots more exciting movies coming up, lots more fun coming up. We will be previewing what those movies are going to be, probably on both Twitter and Facebook. Ooh. Oh, and there's also on our Facebook, we should say, the loop-de-loop scene is on our Facebook page now. You can actually
the super duper looper.
I thought it was just the super duper looper.
I think it's the super duper looper.
Yeah,
I like super duper loop-de-loop.
Super duper loop-de-looper.
Yeah, I like that one. That's how they should have done it.
Interesting. Okay. So
that would have improved things.
Yeah. So you can study the logistics of Santa's rescue and the poor training that went into it.
Yeah.
I think that brings us to the end of our first annual holiday movie fiasco fiesta. Probably not the last, but pretty spectacular
for
our first
one. He doesn't know what fiesta means, by the way.
Yeah, we need someone who speaks Spanish.
Yeah, Fiesta.
Is it Spanish?
Yeah. You would know it. You would know the word Fiesta as shindig.
Oh, okay, shindig.
Yeah, it's a shindig. Yeah.
Okay. A soiree?
You don't even know what it is in Roman.
Yeah.
This is a bunch of V's and
X's and
Z's and Q's.
Makes no sense.
Yeah, some of them upside down.
Yeah.
Sometimes the V is pronounced like a U.
Yeah. Yeah, it could be either one. And as we'll be back next week. If you have suggestions, shoot them at us on Facebook and Twitter. I'm very excited to see everyone. We'll be back here next time.